you got it dialed in. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And as always, it's good to be with you again as we explore the exciting realm of emerging technologies, open innovation, nanotechnology, emerging science. Today we're going to visit with a guy by the name of John Hager. He's an engineer with Lockheed Martin, but Lockheed Martin really has nothing to do with his story. He and his wife, Laura, live in a home way up in the Rocky Mountains, 8,000 feet up above Denver, in a home made out of recycled tires. Fascinating. And John is striving to become zero load on the electrical grid, and you're going to really enjoy this program to see how he's doing it. Also coming up, more wisdom with another personality in our Den of Strangers, and you're going to hear the very latest tiny tech job and the very popular Voice of Reason at the end of the next half hour, all coming up. But right now, remind you, if you're going green, you need to be an exhibitor at the IEEE Green Technologies Conference coming to the Grapevine, Texas Gaylord Resort and Convention Center in the middle of April. This is first-rate IEEE. Now, IEEE, of course, is the Institute for Engineers and Electronics, and it's on the social, economic, and political impacts of renewable energies, all under one roof in April. You can't go wrong. This is stuff you've been wanting to know about, and you can go and find out about it right here in Dallas-Fort Worth. Early discounted exhibitor rates are available through this radio program. If you want to call 214-329-4949, that's 214-329-4949. Or you can just link up at promiseoftomorrow.biz. That's promiseoftomorrow.biz, the name of our radio program, .biz. Or you can Google The Promise of Tomorrow, and that will take you there also. Okay. All right. Today we have as our guest John Hager, and he's in Colorado and has done some really remarkable things with housing. And John, welcome to the program, and tell us a little bit about your house.
Well, Colonel, we've built a house out of 17,000 tires. They were compressed down into bales that were 5 foot by 5 foot by 2.5 feet. They make up the walls of the house, the structural support, and the foundation of the house. And we were the first house in the country, if not the world, to actually finish one of these about a year. And we've been living in there for a year quite comfortably in the mountains of Colorado.
Now, you compress the tires down to what dimensions again? Give me that again.
5 feet by 5 feet by 2.5 feet. And then we stack them up sort of the way you would stack up bricks, except these bales of compressed tires, they have five steel bands holding them together. You can think of them sort of like big building bricks, and we stacked them up three high and then coated them in concrete and hooked our roofing and that kind of stuff to them. And it's a new technology. We're kind of excited to have done it.
Well, it sounds quite interesting to me. How did you compact these tires? And aren't the tires kind of resilient? Don't they want to stay in one shape?
The tires are resilient. They use a machine at a recycling place that compresses them down under 35,000 pounds of pressure per square inch, sort of like one of those car crushers, except smaller. So basically, they take all the air out of the tire, and then they put the steel bands around. They're not shredded or anything like that. They're just whole tires. They were originally compressed down into those bricks so that they occupy less space in a landfill. And some creative people, a civil engineer and a designer and myself, kind of got together and said, gee, we can maybe use this as a building material. And that's exactly what we've done with them.
So the compression of these tires is really standard procedure at a recycling place, and anybody then could have access to them if they wanted to go out and buy the tires. What do you have to pay to get a brick?
That's an interesting question. The bricks, the tire bales themselves were free. Now, we did have to pay moving them because these things weigh a ton each, so we had to lay them on some tractor-trailer rigs and haul them up into the mountains. It was only about a 3-4 hour trip from where they were, but the tire bales were free, and I don't know how it works in every state, but here in Colorado, they have a tire disposal fee, and the people that paid to have their tires disposed essentially gave me my building material because the recycling company got that fee. So the recycling company made money, and I got my walls and foundation of the house virtually for free.
That is absolutely fascinating. You say the bricks themselves weigh about 2,000 pounds each. Is that true?
Yes, that's true. So you have to use some special equipment to move them around and stack them. But once you set them, they're very stable. They don't tip over or anything like that. We get questions, aren't you worried about them tipping over or the bands breaking? They're very stable. The engineer we worked with said they distributed the load. They've been holding the walls of the house up now for, we've only been living in the house for 1 year, but the walls and the structure's been up for now almost 3 years. We're not seeing any kinds of problems with the structure or anything like that. And we also get the question, aren't you worried about the bands on the tires breaking? Because they're now encased in concrete. No, we're not, because they're encased in concrete, in some case rebar reinforced, and they're very, very strong now.
And I'm going to ask you a question you probably can't answer, but what if everybody in all over the place decide they want to build houses out of these things? Is there like an unlimited supply of these tires?
Well, I wouldn't say there's unlimited, and I wouldn't say this is the only solution to, I'll say building problems with recycled materials and things like that. I think there's lots of options out there. But certainly, like here in Colorado, we have one landfill where they have these bales stacked up way down south of Denver. I've seen pictures of the place. These things are maybe 100 yards wide and probably a quarter mile deep, stacked 40 high with these bales. That's a fair amount of bales to be used in buildings. So I don't think we'll run out of bales anytime soon because people keep buying tires for their cars all the time. So you kind of make this natural resource, I put that in quotes, natural resource, because we're recycling something that would otherwise go into a landfill, and we're finding a productive use for it.
Well, that was going to be my next question. I mean, if you didn't build a house with it, it goes into a landfill, and we build mountains on land out of these things? Is that the answer?
Yeah, we do that in some cases. We've talked with the recycling place. There's two or three of them here in the state of Colorado. They get so many tires that they can't have enough uses for recycling. They recycle some of them and use them like in coal-fired plants, which of course puts the carbon back up in the environment, so that's not overly good, but at least it's better than putting in a landfill. But they can only use certain kinds of tires, and so much call for that. They use these in other construction projects. They grind the tires up and use them in other sources, but according to our friends at the recycling place, they still get way more tires than they have uses for yet. So they were really excited to see these houses get started. We were the first to get finished. There's three or four others under construction right at the moment. So there's a few of these, but I wouldn't say anybody's going to run out of tire bales anytime soon.
Well, yours is real high up in the mountains, I understand. The other ones you're talking about, are they your neighbors, or are these all over the world or the country or something?
Primarily, the majority of them right at the moment are in Colorado because that's kind of where the engineer and the guy that came up with the idea got this started. But there are ones that we're aware of under construction in Arkansas, another one up in Washington State. So it's starting to get a little bit of press and some interest in people looking to, let's say, build green. I should also mention the house, as you mentioned, is up in Colorado. It's at 8,200 feet. The house, the rest of the concept for the house, is what they call a passive solar thermal mass house. The whole south end of our house is glass, and it's designed to heat and cool itself with the sun and natural methods. And to give you an example, at our altitude about 3 weeks ago, it was minus 25 overnight, and the daytime temperature was about 5 degrees, but it was sunny inside of the house. During the day, it was 80 degrees, and at night, we only cooled down to about 62 degrees. So the tire bales, actually, besides serving as a structure for the house, they store the energy of the sun, and then you get it back at night. And that appears to be working now for over a year and some.
Well, does this mean that then a house of this sort isn't suitable for tropical climates or like the kind of heat that we get in Texas, that it would be just terribly hard to air condition?
I'll say nobody's really done that or studied that enough where I would know the answer to that question. These approaches do, in the thermal mass, tend to work sort of like a cave. So in a warmer climate or a place like Texas, what I would probably be thinking would happen is you'd have less solar gain, what they call solar gain at certain times of the year, and then the tires would actually serve as a cooling mechanism. As long as they're not getting heat from the sun, they'll retain excess heat and tend to keep the building temperature about the same. But as I said, nobody's actually built one of these houses yet in a warm place. So we don't have, we're still collecting the data on the cold places. We don't have the data on the hot places at all yet.
Well, the thing about the tropical areas is not just that the average temperature is a whole lot warmer, but the sun is very intense. I don't know if you spend much time in Texas, but, I mean, you know, in the summertime, that sun just beats down very, very intensely. And as you go farther south, you have that situation too. Are you saying then that if we had a house made out of these tires here, that what we would have to do is screen off and protect them from the sunlight?
Well, you'd want to protect the house from getting sun from all the windows. Like I said, my entire south end of the house, about 120 feet, is glass windows. And I think in a climate where you didn't need as much heating, you'd have to, I'll say, work the technology slightly differently. But the idea of a thermal mass, I think, could be applicable. But it'd be, again, probably one of those things the people would want to study before just jumping in.
Okay, now how ugly is this house? I mean, you're looking at the house out of crushed tires. I mean, did you say that you cover the outside with concrete?
The initial coat was concrete, and then we did stucco. So the house looks sort of like what you see in Santa Fe and things like that. It's kind of a Santa Fe stucco style of house on the outside. And then the inside walls are also kind of what you see in places like Texas and New Mexico, a Santa Fe feel. The ceilings are wood, and the walls are covered in a kind of a clay stucco mixture. And it's, according to a lot of people that aren't living in it, that come to visit it, it looks very nice. In fact, a lot of them at first say, we don't think there's tires in the walls. Until we show them we have what's known as a truth window. We actually have a window they can look in to see the tires. So you don't see the tires. The other question we get quite a bit is, don't you smell the tires? Well, no, because they're encased in this concrete and a vapor barrier. They're essentially sealed in there. You can't smell them. The other question we get associated with that is, well, aren't you worried about them catching fire? Well, because they're all sealed, there's no way to get either an ignition source or oxygen in. So we've working with the engineers, kind of thought out all these kinds of issues. And if you didn't know that there were tire bales in the house, you probably wouldn't at least initially think that until we show it to you.
Well, the walls of the house are what, 2.5 feet thick? Is that what you're telling me?
No, the walls are actually 5 feet thick.
Oh, wow.
We're up in the mountains, and we sit on 13 acres, so we've got a fair amount of room. But the walls, on the exterior walls where these bales are 5 feet thick. There's only one section of the house in between the main house and the garage where you can actually see that my walls are 5 feet thick. The house design and architecture, besides being kind of Santa Fe, is this very long, single-story house with all these windows facing south for the solar heating. And so every single one of the rooms faces south and has a set of windows. Now, the south wall and inside of the house, we have normal 2x4 construction and things like that. So that's part of what fools people into missing that the tire bales are there. But the north walls, east and west walls, are these 5 feet thick masses of tires encased in stucco and concrete and clay.
Well, surely when you get to an outside window and you look at the window sill, you see that it's 5 feet from one end of the inside wall to the outside wall because you've got a window there, don't you? I mean, how do you have that?
Yeah, only on the east and west windows do you actually see that phenomenon, because those, in fact, you're right, are sitting on bales. And so there we actually have it kind of built in like a little portico or davenport where you got a little shelf and then the window and then the outside. On the south wall, which has the tire bales buried down below ground level, that's done with a normal, actually it's an extra thick wall, but a normal kind of construction. And so the wall thickness there is like what you see in any house with the main set of, it's about 34 windows that we have. So that looks pretty much normal.
Well, then surely you don't use the tires on the roof. So it's a normal, regular wood type roof and shingle and that sort of thing. Is that what you do?
Yeah, it's a normal roof construction. For Colorado, it's a fairly flat roof, but we've got more than enough support from the tire bales. Actually, we have what's known as a metal roof, which does a lot better with the snow that we get up here.
Well, I was going to say, a flat roof isn't good for all the snow that you get, is it?
Well, we've gone through now several winters, and the flat roof, because of the wind direction and where it faces, we get predominant winds west to east. It blows all the snow right off of the roof. And we've never yet had problems with snow loading on the roof. We also, being precautious, we almost doubled the amount of snow load that we can handle on the roof over what the county requires. And I should say, we built this house with the cooperation of the building department in the county. They were very supportive of what we were doing, as long as we followed, I'll say, all the engineering rules and had a civil engineer. So we followed all the electrical and code and plumbing and rules like that. Plus, the civil engineer worked with us on the load and the structure of the house.
Now, I thought you had designed the house, but actually someone else has designed the house and you're using his design?
Yeah, I did the architecture of the house, the basic layout and things. We had what's known as an architectural designer and a civil engineer produce the blueprints for us. I'm not a blueprint kind of person engineer. I do other kinds of engineering. So the architectural designer did the blueprints, and then we worked with a civil engineer who approved all the loads and structures and things like that. But I did the architecture and the general contracting and the construction on the house.
And you live at this house that is at over 8,000 feet up in the mountains all year round. Did you tell me that?
Yep, we sure do.
And up at 8,000 feet, you're not far from the point where foliage quits growing. I think that's about 11,000 feet, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, depending upon your place in the state, it's between 10 and 11,000 feet. So yeah, about another 2,000 feet above us, the trees definitely stop. We look out over nice mountains and have a very reason we selected our particular mountain side is it faces south, so we get lots and lots of sun because we're going for the solar heating concept.
Okay, and do you have a wife and kids too?
We have I have a wife. We never had kids. We have some dogs, and then in the nice time of the year, we have a llama, and we have neighbors that in our valley bring up their cattle. We live on open range, so we're up in the mountains in a very idyllic setting. We get snow quite a bit. This year it's been not as much snow as some years. We only have about 2 feet of snow on the ground right at the moment, but sometimes we'll get 5, 6, 7 feet of snow, and it makes life interesting, but I like snow.
Well, John, the listeners need to know that you're, as I understand, you're an engineer for Lockheed Martin. And if you live in this house up at 8,000 feet, where do you go to work?
I'm what they call now a virtual employee for the company. I travel around the country, in fact, the world, teaching. My specialties are software engineering, test, and systems engineering. So I teach that now to engineers around, particularly in Lockheed Martin, but now sometimes a few other companies. And my job takes me literally traveling, and then I get to come back to Colorado when I'm not on the road.
Okay, so you're gone a lot traveling around the world. What's the closest airport?
The closest airport is about 2 hours away down in Denver. So when you're flying for all day, a little bit extra drive time is not a big deal.
So you're up west of Denver near the Arapaho State Forest, I guess, somewhere in that area, huh?
Yeah, the closest point of reference that viewers or listeners might know is the Rocky Mountain National Park.
Okay.
We're on the western side of that. In fact, we look out over Rocky Mountain National Park in one of our views.
All right. Okay. Well, now, the house itself, not just being ecologically sound because it's made out of old tires, but you've done some other things, too. Did you tell me that it's nearly zero load on the electrical grid, or it's close to it?
We are not quite there yet. We wanted to see what the electric and energy usages of the house were. We've been collecting that data for the last year or two. Last year we had some Colorado School of Mines students studying us, set up some instrumentation. Mm-hmm. We've been collecting the data by the end of this snow season. We'll have enough data to accurately size a photovoltaic system. And we've been investigating the size of that to go in. So hopefully this summer or maybe this fall, we will put in a photovoltaic system along the side of the house, and we will be what's called on-grid, but with net metering. Colorado has something called net metering, where we will be able to use the grid when it's on a cloudy day, which we get up here in the mountains sometimes, and then on a sunny day, we will generate electricity, and anything excess we will sell back to the utility company. And what we'd like to get to over the course of a year is close to a zero energy footprint for the house.
We'll be back to expand more on this subject in the next half hour. We're going to break for the news headlines, science news headlines of the half hour, but first we want to check in with Pam Bailey of Tiny Tech Jobs. Pam, give us a good one.
Well, Nano Oasis Technologies, which is located in my stomping ground, San Francisco Bay Area, mm-hmm. is looking for a senior membrane scientist or engineer. They're looking for a master's or a PhD level candidate with membrane or thin film technology experience to join their company as a senior membrane scientist or engineer. The candidate should have experience with membrane or composite material synthesis, membrane characterization, or thin film coatings, experience in synthetic chemistry and or surface modification is also a plus.
Mm-hmm. All right. I notice there's more jobs coming all the time now. You seem to be getting a wider variety of you. You noticed maybe kind of an uptick in the economy. Is that right?
Yeah, I think things are picking up. I actually do think things are picking up, slowly but surely.
Well, it'll be time pretty soon again when West Texas will have their dust storms coming in the spring. And you know, a West Texan, you know how he knows that a dust storm is coming?
Mm-mm.
He just listens for the sneezing of the rattlesnakes. That's the only... Anyway, for more information on this and other Tiny Tech Jobs, it's tinytechjobs.com. Thanks, Pam. We'll check in with you next week.
Okay.
As we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Anita Luz. I'm furious about the women's liberationists. They keep getting up on soapboxes and proclaiming that women are brighter than men. That's true. But he should be kept very quiet, or he ruins the whole racket.